Liftoff will start in T-minus 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition.
Back to ESA Explores. I'm super excited to have you here again with us to dive into the amazing world of space exploration. If you've been following along with our latest updates and series, you've already met our five European astronaut candidates from the class of 2022. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce to you our next guest, Catherine Bennell-Pegg. Catherine is an astronaut candidate from the Australian Space Agency, who started her training journey here with us at the European Astronaut Center near Cologne, Germany. Through a special agreement with ESA, she's been jumping into her year-long basic astronaut training since April 2023 alongside her European classmates. Right now, the whole group is eagerly anticipating their astronaut graduation, which is just around the corner. So let's get started and meet Catherine. I'm your host, Laura Zermühlen. Let's go. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to our podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, looking forward to another week of training. All of our weeks are intense but exciting.
Yeah, so you have a busy day ahead as well today?
Yeah, sure. So after the podcast, I've got fitness training and then robotics training, looking at how to do different modes on the space station robotic arm. And then in the afternoon, we continue with our space station engineering classes.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I think this one's on re-entry and landing.
Yeah, sounds super exciting. So yeah, you've been on a pretty interesting journey and exciting journey here at the European Astronaut Center in Cologne as well. Could you just lead us briefly through your journey since you've been selected as an Australian astronaut candidate and coming here to train?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been such a whirlwind the past year or so. So I actually found out that I was going to come here and train only a couple of days before it was publicly announced way back in early March 2023. And when I was first told, I was so excited, but I was also cautiously optimistic and didn't want to quite believe it because I'd actually initially got the no in the final round of the ESA astronaut selection, which is quite disappointing but understandable when there's so many other great candidates. So I didn't really want to believe it till I was here at the EAC and zipping up my blue flight suit. So that was a very special moment. But yeah, so initially when I found out, I had 2 days before the public announcement. And I spent the first day just, you know, soaking it in with my husband and family back home before letting myself be concerned about the logistics of moving across the world so quickly and all of the new world with the press that was about to be encountered. But, you know, it was really special. The day of the announcement, I was in Adelaide and having a lineup of journalists at very early hours on North Terrace in front of the Space Agency. And it's across the road from the University of Adelaide, which has a big engineering school. And the people walking past, seeing it be recorded live, were hearing about it for the first time. And a lot of people were actually getting quite emotional because, you know, growing up in Australia, we only very recently have a space agency. We haven't had an astronaut program. We've never had an astronaut officially representing Australia. So people had dreamt for themselves but never believed it could happen. And this was the first time that they thought, wow, maybe I have the chance to really be part of this in Australia as an Australian. So that really hit home to me in a really powerful way, how big this can be for my country, for engineers and scientists, for the level of aspiration back home. So yeah, I'm determined to use this year and whatever comes next to foster that even more.
Wow. And so you've arrived, when did you arrive in Germany then?
The end of March, so a few days before the start of basic training.
And how was it for you to come here and how have your first months of training been here then?
Well, actually for me, it wasn't my first time in Germany. It was coming back to Germany. I've lived in Germany twice before in Würzburg and Bremen. Wonderful experiences. So in a way, it was like coming back to a second home. And I'd once been to the EAC before, actually, as a young engineer. And I was so excited just to come here and be on a tour. So to walk back through the doors again, into the training hall, surrounded by the other ASCANs, being greeted by, you know, experienced astronauts and leaders of human spaceflight. It was very, very special. And on the board above the training hall when we walked in, it said, you know, welcome home, like this is your new home for training. So, yeah, that was a special moment, especially since, you know, in the year before for the selection, myself and probably a lot of the others had been speed reading all of the autobiographies of the experienced ESA astronauts, and then to be greeted as colleagues, it was quite surreal.
Wow. So you lived in Germany before. Do you speak German a little bit then?
Ambition.
Nice.
Yeah, I lived, I think, for 5 years in Bremen, and my kids were born there as well. So it's really nice to have the chance to catch up with old friends and colleagues.
Yeah. Wow. And so it met your expectations, or was there anything surprising also when you came? And
I had a pretty clear expectation of what I expected on the basic training, because during the astronaut selection, you prepare for that. You understand what's to come. But I think what I hadn't really appreciated and what I really enjoy is the really strong level of camaraderie amongst the ASCAN class and amongst all of the people here at the European Astronaut Centre. Everyone's there to uplift each other. There's no competition. It's all collaborative. And you really feel part of something special. The other ASCANs and astronauts are people with great humility, and they're great team players. And it's a really wonderful experience to be learning together.
Yeah, I can imagine, because you have a lot of training sessions all together or also individually?
It's a mix. So a lot of our classroom activities and our expeditions are all together.
Yeah.
But the more operational activities often will branch out individually.
And from all these training sessions or seminars that you had, is there anything that really stood out to you and that you really, really liked?
Oh, I like so much of it. That's a really hard question to answer. I mean, we do so many different things. I would probably say that I enjoy the expeditionary or operational trainings most. We went on the centrifuge, the human centrifuge in the Netherlands, and we got to experience the typical G profile for a launch and re-entry on both Dragon and Soyuz.
Have you done that before?
No, I've not done that before, absolutely. And it's different for, you know, astronauts preparing to go to and come back from space. You have the gravity vector going through your chest, front to back in the centrifuge, whereas say for pilot training, it goes head to foot.
Yeah.
So it's quite a different physiological experience. And, you know, you're basically, you know, what's called meat in a seat. We weren't operating anything. It was to have the feeling of, you know, what it would be like to feel comfortable that we can handle it, because the next phase in the training will probably involve operating a simulator under these G-forces.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty great walking down and getting in, not knowing how you would react.
Yeah.
You know, we were going to feel up to 6 Gs, which is quite a lot. And it was for a reasonable period of time. And we could watch all of our classmates one by one on the screen in the waiting room. You could see their faces contort.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I just couldn't wipe the smile off my face. Like, I just thought it was really incredible. And because it was dark, you could really picture yourself in the capsule on the rocket or returning, and what that might be like.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I was a bit dizzy for
a
while.
I was going to ask if you were doing fine.
I actually walked into a pole pretty hard on camera. Hopefully that footage never surfaces afterwards. But no, we recovered very fast, and it was great to have the confidence that it's something that we can handle.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed the winter survival training we did a couple of weeks ago. We were in the Pyrenees and out for about a week as a class with our trainers. Alex Guest was with us to provide additional guidance, and we learned lots of skills about what happens if, you know, your capsule comes back somewhere unexpected.
Right.
How do you survive? How do you light a fire? How do you rescue people and get warm after you've been swimming in a very, very cold lake, for example?
Yeah.
We had about an evening and most of a day in isolation by ourselves. So you had to set up, you know, how you would sleep and live during that time. And that was actually really beautiful and peaceful, because we had a clear night, which meant it was cold, but you had a beautiful sky of stars through the forest. And it was really interesting. I enjoyed it a lot.
And everybody survived.
We all survived. Yes, we definitely survived and thrived. And, you know, there were lots of nice conversations together around the fire.
Yeah.
A great team bonding experience as well.
I can imagine.
Yeah, not having any electronics or even watches all week.
Also, no phones, no GPS.
Yeah, not even analog watches.
Oh,
so
wow.
You had to learn to really be present,
yeah.
Which is something we don't get the opportunity, any of us, to do in our normal lives. So it taught us to value that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And is there anything coming up still that you're looking forward to?
I'm really enjoying the space station engineering courses. Mm-hmm. I had the chance in my career to work on part of the space station. And so to learn about the facility in more depth is really exciting for me. But I'm particularly excited about the parabolic flight, the zero-g flight campaign that's coming up right before graduation.
Yeah.
I've done one before to experience it many years ago, but this time we're going to also look at learning how do you move in zero-g. What happens if, you know, you're operating a drill? How do you brace yourself so you're the one spinning, not the one spinning, sorry. How do you learn to brace yourself so you're not the one spinning, the drill is, right? And how do you turn a corner? What we've been told by some of the flown astronauts is it's not necessarily so hard to start moving, but to stop. You know, when you walk up to something, you don't think, do I have to slow down and stop? Your body does
just
it. But if you're in space, you have to learn how to brace yourself, how to turn a corner and so on.
Is there, during all this training, you also mentioned the great group dynamic and everything. Was there any other funny moment maybe together with the group and the other SKNs?
The ones that come to mind, I'll never tell you. you know, I think that, we've just had a great shared experience as a team. I think that it's really important for astronauts to be in a really cohesive team in space. Mm-hmm. In fact, your safety depends on it and the efficiency of the mission as well. So there's a huge focus on learning theoretically and practically how to build trust in teams.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly interesting and you can see it works. And so for me, it's an accumulation of experiences, both social and professional, that have led to that. And we're all embarking on this adventure together. And it's exciting.
From your background, you are a space systems engineer. Do you see any parallels between your past experiences and the current training? And maybe did it help you with the training that you're doing here?
Absolutely. You know, I've spent about the past 15 years working as a space engineer. On some of the most exciting missions for me that are helping to address, you know, compelling challenges or answer big scientific questions about the world. I started my career as a mission systems engineer, which means early phases. So you get to look at a lot of different mission types, mostly trying to help scientists design missions to answer their big questions. So that gave me a really great breadth of experience in different kinds of technologies, different kinds of missions. And that sort of jack of all trades approach is something that's really important in astronaut training. You know, I'm learning a lot of new things too, though. So on basic astronaut training, the purpose is really to bring all of the class up to the same level of knowledge and skills to be good astronauts. So all of us have different strengths and knowledge we bring to the table. For me, I've learned a lot about medicine, for example, and biology that I didn't know before. They weren't my fields of expertise. But even in the engineering, I'm learning a lot too, because the instructors bring the latest knowledge and the latest insights that might not be in the public domain. So yeah, that's really helpful.
I read on the internet, actually, that already in high school, or you always wanted to become an astronaut, and you picked becoming an astronaut as your career choice already in a very young age. So this has always been your dream?
Yeah, absolutely. As a child, I was absolutely fascinated by the world around me and wanted to understand why things were the way they are, how things worked. And I think that when I realized that, you know, the clear sky above me at night where I grew up was not just pinpricks of light, but, you know, some of those pinpricks were entire worlds, planets, or, you know, looking through binoculars, occasionally you could see galaxy, the nearby galaxies. That just blew my mind as a child of the scale of the universe. And when you're young and you like the outdoors and you like hiking and you're curious, adventure as an astronaut is very, very compelling.
Yeah.
And so like many children, I had that dream, but I was stubborn enough to never entirely let it go. So yes, at high school on my careers counselor form. I wrote, I want to be an astronaut and nothing else. And my school and my parents were good enough to not patronize me, but rather to say, well, go figure out what that'll take, probably hoping I'd see sense once we saw how unlikely it was. But what I learned was that, you know, to be an astronaut, you can have many different kinds of career. You can be an engineer, you can be a scientist, you can be a pilot, you can be a doctor. You usually will benefit from international experience, playing sports, expeditionary experiences and so on. And all of that just seems so exciting to me. And so I explored what I might enjoy, and I did aerobatic flying as a teenager. I did a lot of, you know, backyard astronomy. I read widely. And what I didn't realize at the time was that other things I enjoyed, like a lot of sports and team activities, were just as important in setting up the right behaviors and basis for being an astronaut. So in the end, I applied to study engineering at university without really knowing exactly what engineering was, just that you get to help invent new space things and work on space missions. And I'm so glad I did because, you know, that career has taken me all around the world. I've been able to live and work in more than six countries, some multiple times. You know, I've launched balloons from under the Aurora. I've got to travel across Australia technology scouting for what can spin into space. I've been able to work on big scientific missions, Earth observation missions, human spaceflight missions, sending people back to the moon, and more recently, helping to grow a space sector in Australia, which is really exciting. Because when I was young and had that dream, I realized pretty quickly how unattainable it is. You know, in Australia, we didn't have a space agency even at that time. And so even to work on space missions, I had to spend my most of my career overseas. So I think as you develop in the field in space, you realize how unlikely it is to be an astronaut, and you just hope that maybe one day you have the chance to apply. And in the meantime, you get on with your career. And I was so thrilled to be contributing to space missions. You know, initially, I was just so excited to work on something that was in space, like analyzing the data, and then as an intern to work on the component of a spacecraft going to space, and then in my career, a subsystem, then a system, then delivery of a full mission, and then ultimately helping to grow a whole sector. So I guess my aspirations and realizations of what could be possible kept growing. And I kind of for a while forgot about the astronaut ambition, right? And I was just really thrilled when I saw the European Space Agency opened up the applications, and I said, oh, here I'll be, have a chance and be able to throw my hat in the ring. And it's unlikely, but I hope that I have what it takes to at least get through the first round. So every round I got through, I was just really, really excited.
And now you're here.
And now I'm here. Pinch me. So when I was young in Europe, I was able to take part in a lot of the ESA education programs. For example, I was part of a student experiment on Rexus Bexus, launching a balloon, you know, under the Aurora. Went to many of their conferences and education activities and did my internship for my master thesis, actually, in the thermal control section. Yeah, it's been a long relationship with me and ESA, and it's been wonderful to learn from their experts and contribute to their missions over the years.
And I have to ask, what was the experiment with the balloon?
Well, we were students and had the idea that, you know, perhaps it could be interesting if you dropped something off a balloon, a payload, in an aerodynamic shell, that perhaps you get a really nice ability to test microgravity payloads in a repeatable way if you had it on a line. So we basically used a fishing reel-like mechanism to do that, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice. Sounds good. And it was successful?
It was partial mission success. Partial mission success. But we learned a lot. We went through our full review cycles guided by ESA experts, and that was probably one of the most powerful experiences I had before entering the industry.
Yeah, wow, really a lot of very, very interesting like experiences that led you here. And you already said that you worked in a lot of different countries also. And how is it here for you? Because we also have a few people from many different countries, also your fellow ESCans. And how is this international environment here for you? I guess you're used to it already, but is there anything?
Yeah, I mean, I love working in international environments, you know, especially in space, because you all have such different backgrounds, but you're united by that common passion for, you know, contributing through space, whether that be scientific discovery or services to help life on Earth or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And in an international environment, I find that people tend to be really generous with how they interact. You try and look through the words of what people say, because, you know, people are rarely in their first language, to the intent of the message behind it. So you can quickly find common ground to build really interesting, diverse teams that can, you know, help solve problems because of those different backgrounds. And yeah, hearing different languages and accents can be, you know, good fun in having a bit of humor together as well in the way people say things.
And maybe looking to the future then, is what are you most excited about the future of space exploration?
I think, you know, right now it's such an exciting time to be involved in space exploration, no matter what your role is. Mm-hmm. We're really on the cusp of the next great, you know, exploration and utilization endeavor for space. We have the Artemis program ramping up with humans going back to the moon, you know, to do a different science, looking at how humans can understand the moon to drive forward our understanding of the Earth and its climate and its origins, and to learn how to live and work sustainably that far away from Earth in space. And I think that's incredibly interesting. Particularly the research we can do on radiation and geology. We're having, you know, low Earth orbit stations potentially becoming commercial, and that's going to really unlock opportunities for science on Earth and technology developments, because we can use those stations to do a lot more research, for example, into new materials, into medicine, into human physiology, and also into, you know, in-space robotics and automation, which is the key to unlocking the ability to use space more sustainably, to assemble in space, to disassemble in space, and to deorbit in a sustainable way. So it's really exciting, the future.
Yeah. And do you have anything that you're maybe personally looking forward to once, if you go on a space mission? Is there anything you would like, you're looking forward to experience or to do, or maybe a specific experiment?
Oh gosh, everything. For me, I think it would be absolutely incredible to, from an experiential point of view, to, you know, step out of the airlock and do an EVA into the vastness of space, to be surrounded by, you know, the Earth below or above you, depending on how you frame it in your mind, you know, amongst the beautiful facility that is the International Space Station, contributing to installing a new experiment. I know that when we visited Thales Alenia Space in Italy, we got to try out a VR system for Gateway, and we got to do a virtual sort of EVA out of Gateway. And, you know, it takes your breath away, because you had a view of the moon and the Earth, because the moon's quite far away in that particular orbital scenario. And it's just, yeah, mesmerizing. I think, yeah, that would be incredible. But, you know, we don't go to space for the experience. We go there to get a job done. And so I would really love to be there installing some new scientific equipment that would make, you know, fundamental steps forward in human knowledge. And, you know, ideally an Australian experiment that could do that would be really special for me.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for someone who wants to follow your steps maybe and become an astronaut or work in the space sector as well?
Absolutely. I'd say go for it. Dream big, dream audaciously, but don't just dream of wanting to be an astronaut. Dream of what you want to do by being an astronaut. You know, dream of what you want to contribute, what you want to help discover, what you want to help solve. I think that's far more, you know, compelling and deeply rooted in you when you want to contribute to a role rather than just be one.
Yeah.
You know, pursuing an astronaut dream is really a joy. It's about the future. It's about bringing benefit to humanity and society far bigger than yourself, as part of a wonderful team. And all the backups are wonderful careers in their own right.
Yeah.
You know, I love being a space engineer. I had a, and am having a great career being a space engineer. And yeah, go for it. And for kids that are dreaming of it, work hard at school, because if you work hard, more doors open for you.
Yeah. With graduation coming up soon, do you know what's coming next for you?
Well, I'll stay here at the Astronaut Center a little bit longer to wrap up the training and work to, you know, unlock more opportunities for Australian organizations to be involved in human spaceflight. I'm really excited about that. And then I look forward to going home and, you know, bringing the knowledge and insights home to help further Australian capabilities in space. I look forward to getting into schools. And then what comes next after that, we will see. It's a decision for Australia to take when the time is right. But yeah, I'm very excited for the future.
Yeah. Okay, now I have a quick question round for you. And do you have a favorite space-related quote or saying?
Oh, which one will I pick? There are so many. I think, you know, for me, usually it's quotes that engender a sense of wonder.
Yeah.
That are exciting for me. So I'll give you two. The first one is from Henry Lawson in Freedom of the Wallaby.
Mm-hmm.
He says, though the road may be winding, the fields are wide open and the sky is aflame with the sun. And for me, that is about the magnitude of the opportunity of what remains to be discovered, because there's so much in our world that remains to be discovered. You know, to discover new knowledge you can't even imagine is a major outcome of exploration. And when we explore, we find mysteries and compose new questions. And the technologies we develop in doing so apply across all industries. So I love that spirit of exploration piece. Yeah. The other quote is a bit more practical, and it's one I heard the other day when an Australian delegation came through. And one of them gave a quote, I think it was from Scott, a famous Antarctic expeditioner, and he said, once I've assembled my team, there is nothing more I can do to ensure the success of my mission. And at first that seems odd, right? We do a lot of technology development, we do a lot of logistics, but actually that all relies on the team.
True.
The people and their interactions. So that importance of the team in achieving.
The right people together, then
Then anything is possible. Yeah.
Wow. Great. And has your new experience and knowledge just changed the way you look at science fiction shows or space-related content?
I love good science fiction shows, and I also like bad ones because I'm one of those annoying people that likes to poke holes in them. And I think basic training's given me a lot more ammunition to do that across a lot more topics. I remember living in Bremen, which is a city-state with a lot of different space organizations, and going and watching a particular space movie, and you hear sighs and muttering from different parts of the cinema as different topics appear on screen with errors. So I enjoy all sorts of science fiction books and movies.
And if you could have a video call with any historical figure, who would it be?
Oh, that's a hard one. I'd probably go for Tsiolkovsky, who's one of the, you know, the fathers of, you know, space flight and space travel, and inspired a lot of the developments in the last century. Like one of our instructors said, if he knew what we were doing today, he'd probably send us to Sigmund Freud. But I'd really like to, you know, tell him that what he dreamed about and wrote about airlocks and space stations, you know, he invented the rocket equation, that, you know, we've put people on the moon, that we have space stations around Earth, that there's going to be a space station around the moon, and that we're using these to benefit humanity would be really exciting. And the question I would ask him is, what does he think is going to come next? I'd love to hear his vision for our future.
Great. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you, and thank you for sharing all your stories and experiences with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Wrapping up today's chat with Catherine, I really got to say I'm so excited for her and all the new astronauts. Her insights on teamwork and collaboration truly strike a chord, right? I can't wait to see where the journey leads next. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about Catherine and our astronaut class of 2022, head over to the official ESA Exploration blog at blogs.esa.int/exploration. You can connect with Catherine on social media, where she's at AussieAstroCat on X and AussieAstroCatherine on Instagram. Join the conversation on X at ESA Spaceflight using the hashtag ESAExplores. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe and share on your favorite podcast platform and on ESA's YouTube channel. Stay tuned for our next episodes, and thank you for listening to ESA Explores.